frame, i.e. to get everybody out by 9:30. So I'm just going to have to talk extra fast.
Yeah, right.
So that's what they say, you know, on the shorter Shabbos, and like the winter Shabbos, it's very hard to take a nap in the afternoon on Shabbos. You just have to, you know, sleep a little faster in order to happen right in the same amount of sleep. So not that we're comparing the Haftarah to a Shabbos nap. But what's that? No, it's okay. Haftarah is 1176 in the back of the Chumashim. And here, as opposed to last week, where we had a whole confusion about which Haftarah is the proper Haftarah for Achrei Mos Kedoshim and the like, when it comes to Haftarah of Emor, first of all, the Haftarah itself is pretty poshut, pretty self-evident, you know, pretty much agreed upon what the Haftarah is. And it's also, as we'll get into it, it's fairly obvious what the connection is between the Haftarah and the Sedra. Emor, as a Sedra, talks about, in large part, the halachas that are relevant to the Kohanim, right? The halachas that are relevant to all the priests and the like, and the Haftarah, which is taken from Sefer Yechezkel, also talks about the halachas that are relevant to the Kohanim. The major difference between the Sedra and the Haftarah lies in the following facts. When we did the Haftarah for Shabbos HaChodesh, which was also from Yechezkel, we pointed out that a large part of the end of Yechezkel deals with the halachas that will be relevant during the third Beit HaMikdash. Right? Yechezkel is already predicting the first Beit HaMikdash has just been destroyed during the time of Yechezkel. Yechezkel is looking past the second Beit HaMikdash to the Gula HaAsida, to the final redemption when Mashiach is going to come, and the third Beit HaMikdash, Bezus Hashem, is going to be rebuilt. And we pointed out when we learned the Haftarah of Shabbos HaChodesh that one of the difficult issues in Sefer Yechezkel is that many of the descriptions of the way the third Beis HaMikdash is going to function don't fit with the way Halacha seems to dictate the first and the second Beis HaMikdash function. Right? We pointed out specifically, if you recall from Shabbos HaChodesh, there the Haftarah talks about all different kinds of karbanos that are going to be brought on Shabbos, on Rosh Chodesh, different days during the month, and these karbanos, these sacrifices we should describe in that parsha in Yechezkel seem to bear no relevance to what we know from halacha the way it exists. So if you recall back then, we pointed out that there are different ways to deal with these discrepancies. Either you can say, well, if you go through each pasuk and you really interpret it in a way that doesn't correspond to the simple pshat, really the pasuk can be interpreted to fit back into what we know the halacha is. And, you know, that's not considered to be out of line, since Chazal tell us that, you know, we can interpret the pasuk in a less pshat-oriented way, so that's a valid way of interpreting the pasuk. And this approach would hold that even though the pasuk seems to contradict what we know is the accepted halacha, we're just not reading the pasuk correctly. If you read the pasuk properly, you know, you force it a little bit, so, you know, you'll see that the halacha and the pasuk really fit together. The second approach is to say that no, what Yechezkel says on the surface is exactly what Yechezkel means. Yechezkel is giving a different set of halachas, which is different from what halacha, the way we understand it, prescribes. However, there's a new set of regulations which will apply during the third Beis HaMikdash. Third Beis HaMikdash is going to be on an exalted level of Kedusha, above and beyond what was in place during the first and second Batei Mikdash. So the rules are going to change. And in fact, as we'll see in the Haftarah, the rules are going to become stricter. It's not that, you know, it's not that we're going to downgrade during the third Beis HaMikdash. The rules are going to be stricter during the third Beis HaMikdash. That's the second approach. The halachas we're going to see here today deal with the Kohanim in the third Beis HaMikdash. And we're going to have that same machlokus over here, that same dispute. You look, actually, the art scroll Chumash sums it up very, very nicely at the bottom of the page, that Rashi, classically throughout this Haftarah, takes the position that all of the seemingly contradictory halachas which are stated about the Kohanim can somehow be reinterpreted to fit back into halacha the way we know it. And the Radak takes the second position that no, really all of the halachas here really are different from the halachas the way we know them about the Kohanim. It's just that things are going to get stricter during the time of the third Beis HaMikdash. Two very different ways to read what's going on here in Yechezkel. Halavai, very soon we should see the third Beis HaMikdash, and we'll find out then, you know, which interpretation is going to be fulfilled. I have no doubt that somehow both interpretations are correct, And, you know, we'll see how that works out, you know, Be'ezus Hashem, when the third Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. So it says the Haftarah, Ba'kohanim ha'levim b'nei tzadok, asher shomu es mishmeres mikdashi b'sos b'nei yisroel me'olai, heimo yikruvei elai l'shor seini. We come into this parsha in Yechezkel sort of in the middle of a discussion. The previous psukim in Sefer Yechezkel describe how, unfortunately, over the ages, you know, that the first Beis HaMikdash was in existence, many of the Kohanim were not faithful to the Ribbono Shel Olam. They did not follow the task of the Kohen, which, as we'll see in this Haftarah, is not simply to be a ritual functionary. You know, the Kohen is not just, you know, the guy who's working with the Karbanos. The Kohen is supposed to be a role model and a teacher for the Jewish people at large. And unfortunately, for much of history, the Kohanim, although they may have served in the Beis HaMikdash, they were not role models of what Judaism is supposed to preach. And many of the Kohanim strayed from the path of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says Yechezkel, those families that strayed from the path of Torah, even though they were families of Kohanim, they will be Kohanim when the third Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. After all, they are from a family of Kahuna, but, you know, they'll get kind of sidelined in terms of the Beis HaMikdash. They're not going to be involved in the actual bringing of Korbanos, but V'hayu b'mikdash, I'm reading from Pasuk Yud Aleph, which you don't have in the Haftarah, but comes shortly before our Haftarah opens up. Those families of Kohanim that strayed from the proper path, V'hayu b'mikdashim misharsim pekudos al shari habayis misharsim es habayis. They're going to be second-level servants in the third Beis HaMikdash. They'll take care of the upkeep of the house, of the Beis HaMikdash. They'll take care of the gates. Heimo yishchatu es ha'olav es ha'zevach la'am. They can shech the korbanos. You should point out, alpi halacha, according to halacha, shchita k'shera b'zor, a kohen doesn't have to actually slaughter the korban. The kohen actually only deals with the korban once the blood is gathered from the korban, and the parts of the korban are burnt on the mizbeach. But the actual slaughtering of the korban can take place through a non-kohen. So in when the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, the third Beis HaMikdash, these kohanim from families that strayed will be given tasks that are kind of secondary in nature. They won't be involved in the nuts and bolts of actually bringing the korbanos, which really a kohen should be doing. In contrast, our Haftarah opens up, HaKohanim HaLevim B'nei Tzadok. Tzadok, who was the Kohen Gadol during the time of David HaMelech and subsequently Shlomo HaMelech, that family of Kohanim apparently stayed faithful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu despite all the ups and downs. Right? So they're going to be rewarded, that family of Kohanim is going to be rewarded when the third Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, HaKohanim HaLevim B'nei Tzadok, Asher Shomu Es Mishmeres Mikdashi. They stood fast and protected my mikdash, b'sos b'nei Yisrael me'olai, even when the rest of the Jewish people deserted me, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. Heimo yikruvei lai l'shor seini. When the third Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, the Kohanim who will be functioning will be drawn from the family of Tzadok as a reward for the fact that they stood, you know, they went the extra mile. They stood fast. They didn't stray, even when everyone else was leaving the Derech of Torah. V'amdu lefonai, they will stand before me, v'hakriv li chelev v'adam, and they will offer up the fats and the blood, Noam Hashem Elokim, they will be the ones who will actually bring the korbanos. Heimo yavo el mikdashi, they will come to my mikdash, v'heimo yikruv el shulchani l'sharseini, they will come to my table, i.e. my altar, my mizbeach, to serve me, v'shamuas mishmarti, they will guard my Beis HaMikdash. You know, they will be rewarded for their faithfulness when the Moshiach comes. So far, so good. Then Pasuk Yud Zayin starts telling us laws about the Kohanim, which, again, as we mentioned in our introduction, don't correspond on the surface to what Halacha, the way we generally understand it, tells us should be the role of the Kohanim. Bahaya will come to pass. When the Kohanim come into the gates of the inner courtyard, they should wear linen clothing. They shouldn't wear any woolen clothing. when they serve in the inner courtyard and within. Pare fishtim yu al rosham, they should wear linen turbans, linen hats. Umichnesei fishtim yu al masnehem, they should wear linen breeches, you know, linen pantaloons. Lo yachkeru bayoza, they shouldn't wrap themselves, they shouldn't gird themselves with anything which is going to cause them to sweat. Yaza is related to the word zeya, right? Sweat or condensation, right? They shouldn't wear anything which is going to cause them to sweat. On the surface, what these two psukim are telling us is that there's the halacha, that the kohanim shouldn't sweat, right, when they're performing the service, which if you think about it, makes a lot of sense. I mean, on the one hand, they were doing a lot of physical activity. Certainly, it would be normal for them to get all sweated up. On the other hand, it's not dignified for a kohen, you know, you come into the Beis HaMikdash, the kohanim are schwitzing all over the place, you know, it doesn't create a, you know, doesn't exactly give off a good image of what the Beis HaMikdash is about. So how do you deal with that problem? So the Navi Yecheskel says they should only wear linen, right? We know that wool is heavier than linen, right? Let them always wear linen. If this way, if they're always wearing linen, at least it's less likely that, you know, they're going to get all schwitzed up when they're performing the avodah. Sounds like a good piece of advice. The problem is that the Kohen used to wear something called an avnet, a kind of belt-like item. And this avnet, we know, according to Torah law, contains some wool in it. Right? Chakras pocket, right? Actually, there was wool in it, right? And, and according to many opinions, it was chakras. It was a special heter for the Kohen to wear chakras. So how do you square that with this pasuk or these psukim? I mean, after all, according to what we understand about the kohanim, they were wearing at least a little bit of wool, right? And here the pasuk says that, you know, they wore linen so as not to get all sweated up. So again, according to the Radak, you know, and his approach, you have the easiest answer over here. That was then, this is now, right? You know, the kohanim nowadays, or then a days, you know, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Bayis Rish, in the Bayis Sheni, indeed did wear Semer, there was some wool which they wore, but lasted lava when the Beit HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, there's going to be, so to speak, a higher standard which is imposed on the Kohanim. For whatever reason, it's going to become more important to not have any wool in their garments whatsoever, and the Torah is going to, the Avnet, you know, in future times, the belt of the Kohanim is going to be made up differently. It's not going to have the wool in it which the Avnet has now. Clearly that's, you know, the easiest way of dealing with the psukim, to give that kind of approach. Again, as we pointed out, Rashi takes a different approach throughout this whole section. He learns that whenever you have a pasuk that contradicts what we know as the halacha, we have to somehow reinterpret the pasuk in Yecheskel to make it jive with what we know the halacha is now. And again, if we recall back when we spoke about the Navi Yecheskel on Shabbos HaKodesh, the Haftar of Shabbos HaKodesh, we pointed out that originally Chazal had tremendous misgivings about Sefer Yecheskel precisely for this reason, precisely because so many Nirin Dvarav, Sosra and Divrei Torah, so many of the statements in Yecheskel, specifically places like here, seem to contradict what we know about Torah law. And until, you know, one individual sat up with 300 oil lamps in the attic and he worked out all of the difficulties. Right, yeah. So
Yecheskel himself came from a family of Kohanim.
Right.
Wasn't he well versed in?
Yeah. No. So in other
procedures?
Words, so again, either you have to understand that this is all Hilchos LaMashiach, this is going to be what's going to be when Moshiach comes, or that no, we really, Yecheskel meant what the Torah means. Just we don't know how to read it, the Pesukim well enough in order to get at that. So here, Rashi. So okay. So here specifically, like, how do you deal with this particular pasuk? So Rashi tells us as follows. Rashi says these two psukim are not talking about Kohanim in general. They're talking about the Kohen Gadol. Now, it doesn't say Kohen Gadol in our pasuk, right? But again, there's the same way in Chumash, you have Torah Shebaal Peh, you know, there's an oral tradition as to what it meant, right? Even though the Chumash sometimes will say one thing, Ayin Tachas Ayin. But we know Torah Shebaal Peh doesn't mean knock the guy's eye out, it means pay money the value of an eye. So too in Yecheskel, the Torah Shebaal Peh. Right? So v'hayo b'voam, when they come, refers not to the Kohanim generally, but to the Kohanim Gedolim throughout the generations. When the Kohanim Gedolim, or when the Kohen Gadol, there's only one Kohen Gadol per generation, when the Kohen Gadol comes, El Sha'arei Hechotzer HaPnimis, when he comes to the gate of the inner courtyard, Now, says Rashi, what's that referring to? Kodesh HaKodesh. When does the Kohen go? The inner courtyard. What's the inner courtyard par excellence? The most inner place you can get to in the Beis HaMikdash. The Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKodesh. Right? When does the Kohen Gadol come in to the Kodesh HaKodesh? Only on Yom Kippur, right? That was last week's parasha, right? He only comes in on Yom Kippur. So, big day tishtim yilboshu, the Kohen Gadol should only wear linen clothing. And indeed, we know, al pi halacha, that the Kohen Gadol has two sets of clothing which he wears on Yom Kippur. This is what's called the big day zahav. The golden garments, the eight garments which are described in the psukim, in Sefer Shmos, you know, the elaborate, you know, when we picture the Kohen Gadol with the choshen and the ephod and all of that, you know, those are the big garments which we associate with the Kohen Gadol. But the halacha tells us when he goes l'fnai v'lifnim, when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadosh on Yom Kippur, he doesn't wear the big day zahav, he wears what's called the big day lavan, the white, simple linen clothing, you know, without the whole get-up, you know, it's a much simpler set of clothing, when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadosh. So according to Rashi, that's what this pasuk in Yechezkel is telling us. When the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur goes into the Kodesh HaKodashim, he should wear big day lavan. He should wear linen, the special linen garments which are set aside for the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Is that what you would think when you read the pasuk straight? No. But again, that's Torah Shebaal Peh coming along and telling us that this is really what Yechezkel meant when describing the activities of the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, the third Beis HaMikdash. The end of Pasuk Yudches says, "Lo yachkeru b'yosa," that the Kohanim should not wear anything which is sweat-producing, right? So the Chazal say that what this means is that this is talking about the Kohanim in general, not just the Kohen Gadol. Now we switch back to Kohanim, and when the Kohanim tie the sash around their garments, they should do so in a place where in such a way so that the garments are not clinging to their armpits or to the middle of their legs. That area, the cloak, the robe which they wear, in that area shouldn't be tight-fitting so as that they shouldn't sweat. So it's not a description of the kind of garments which they should be wearing. In other words, it's a description of how the garments should be worn. The garments shouldn't be worn in a tight-fitting way, in a way in which is naturally going to produce sweat. Again, that would be something which would be disrespectful for the avod in the Beis HaMikdash, and you see the kohen walking around and schwitzing from his armpits to the light, and that doesn't look nice. So the garment should be tied loosely so that, you know, it's not clinging to those sweat-producing parts of his body. Right? The pasuk continues in your text. Uvitseitzom el hechoser hatzitzono, when they go out and they exit into the outer courtyard, El hechotzer hachitzona el ha'am, when they go out to the people, yifshutu es bigdeyam ashehem ha'mishar simbam, they should take off the clothing which they were serving in, v'nichu osam b'lishchos ha'kodesh, and they should put them into special holy offices, v'lovshu b'godim acherim, they should wear other clothing, v'lo yikadshu es ha'am b'vigdeyhem. The word yikadshu over here is translated, you see in the English, let them not mingle with the people while they're still wearing the clothing, right? So how do you get mingle out of the word kedoshim? So the Mitzvah writes over here, leman lo yihya nira sheha'am kedoshim kemosam. They shouldn't create the misimpression that they're one of the boys, so to speak, that a kohen, a non-kohen, they're all the same. The Kohanim have to maintain their distinctiveness by not wearing their clothing when they're among the people. Right? They shouldn't be in contact with the Yisraelim while wearing their clothing. Right? By virtue of wearing their clothing out among the people, they shouldn't sanctify the people by giving off the misimpression that Kohanim, Yisraelim, they're all the same. Again, this is a halacha which doesn't seem to resonate with the halacha the way we know. I mean, the Kohen's only supposed to wear the clothing b'shas avodah. He's only supposed to wear the clothing while he's performing the service, right? He's not supposed to, you know, when he goes out for dinner that night, he's not supposed to walk around in his big day kahuna. You know, there's special ceremonial garments, which if he uses them in the wrong context, is me'ilos, considered to be using big day kodesh in an inappropriate way. He's making an inappropriate usage of the holy garments. But he can come into contact, as long as he's doing the avodah, he can come into contact with the Yisraelim while wearing the clothing. I mean, let's say the Yisrael brings the carbon into the azara, into the courtyard. He's going to interact with the Yisrael for a couple of minutes while he's performing the avoda. Nobody ever said that was a problem, right? So again, radak, third base hamikdash, higher level, higher standards, right? The kohanim have to conduct themselves on a higher standard when the third base hamikdash is built. They shouldn't even mingle. They shouldn't even come into contact with Yisraelim while wearing these holy garments. Okay, simple. That's the easiest way of dealing with it. Rashi understands. Again, this pasuk jumps back to the Kohen Gadol, and it tells us that after the Kohen Gadol finishes the service on Yom Kippur, so the clothes which he wore have to be put away into Geniza. They have to be put away into Shemus. Right? Unless you can't. It's not like, you know, he sends the big day love into the cleaner after Yom Kippur, and then he brings them back the next year to be able to use them again. The big day love have to be put away into Shemus. They can't be used after that year of Yom Kippur. Right? So again, you know, Rashi takes this pasuk and relates it back to halacha, which we already know, even though it's certainly not what you would think on the surface by reading the pasuk. V'roshav lo yigalechu, the kohanim should not shave their heads. U'fera lo yishalechu, on the other hand, they shouldn't let their hair grow wild. Kosom yichsumu es roshehem, they should basically get what, I guess the best way to put it, they should get a buzz cut. Kasom yichsumu es roshehem. Where do you get that? I mean, what's the lashon kasom yichsumu? So if you look, the Rashi writes, kikosemes hazo, should be like, what is it? Kosemes is kind of spelt, I think it is, right? Spelt or rhymes. It's a certain kind of grain that grows. How does kosemes grow? Shisturim b'shibolas rosh shelzeh b'tzad ikro shelzeh. The grains grow very close to one another, such that the tip of one grain hits up with the you know, it comes up exactly, no more, no less, to the stem of the other grain. So in other words, the effect that it's a buzz cut. In other words, the effect that his haircut is supposed to have is that each hair should go down as far as the beginning, the root of the next hair, and no further. Not like, you know, a person has a longer haircut, so one hair grows into the hair which is right next to it. You know, here each hair is separate, essentially, right? Each hair, it covers exactly the amount of area on the head up until the next hair, and that's it. You know, no more than that, right? So the kohanim is supposed to keep a very trim haircut. You know, which again obviously meant that he had to get a haircut pretty frequently. It's supposed to keep a very trim looking appearance. Again, we find in halacha that this is a halacha by the Kohen Gadol. That is a halacha that brought, you know, that Chazal say that the Kohen Gadol was supposed to keep himself very, very trim. He was mistaker b'chol yom. He would take a haircut every day in order to maintain that appearance. We don't find in the halacha the way we know it that this is a halacha which pertains to the average Kohen. Again, the Radak would tell you that, okay, in third Beis HaMikdash times, every Kohen now becomes elevated to the higher Madrega of a Kohen Gadol. Rashi would tell you this Pasuk is talking specifically about the Kohen Gadol, not about the Kohen Hedyot, the Stam Kohen, who would be out there. V'ayim lo yishtu kol Kohen b'varmel l'chaser apnimis. Kohanim should not drink wine when they come into the inner courtyard. That's the halacha which does resonate with the halacha the way we know it, right? The kohanim are not supposed to even take a drink. They're not supposed to even have a revius worth of wine, a small amount of wine, before performing the avodah. Pasuk Chof Beis, however, becomes a problematic pasuk again. V'almana u'grusha lo yikhu lohem l'noshim. The kohanim shouldn't marry a widow or a divorcee. Right, now, that's not what it says in Chumash, right? In Chumash it says, a kohen gadol can't marry a widow or a divorcee. A Stam Kohen can marry a widow,
right?
Just he can't marry a divorcee, right?
Right.
Here the pasuk says, no, almano gushal yichalem lanoshim. They can't marry neither a widow nor a divorcee. Again, how do you deal with this pasuk? So Rashi would say, well, this is talking about the Kohen Gadol. It doesn't say Kohen Gadol. Yeah, okay, but talk about the Kohen Gadol. Torah Shabbal Peh. And the Radak would say, you know what? When Mashiach comes, all the Kohanim are going to be elevated to the higher level of a Kohen Gadol with the extra chumras that entails. Okay, good. We can deal with that. Right? But then the balance of the pasuk is even more difficult to deal with. Kiyum besulos mizera beis Yisrael. They should only marry virgins from Jewish stock. Right? By the way, that part, a certain part of this is relevant halacha lemaisa. A Kohen is not allowed to marry a Gioras. I was not allowed to marry a convert. And that's based on the second part of the pasuk, Mizera Beis Yisrael. The Kohanim are only allowed to marry a virgin who comes from she was born Jewish. That part of the pasuk we do accept halacha l'maisa. However, veho almana, asher tihye almana mikohen yikachu. But the Kohen, even though he's not allowed to marry a widow, can marry a widow if her first husband was also a Kohen. Right? A widow who was the widow of a Kohen. Now that's a halacha which doesn't correspond to anything we know. Right? I mean, on the one hand, a Kohen Gadol can't marry a widow, period. Right? According to halacha. A Kohen Hedyot, a regular Kohen, can marry a widow. Right? No exceptions to the rule. This kind of, this compromise, well, you can't marry a widow unless she was married to a Kohen, unless her first husband was a Kohen. That's totally out of nowhere. Where does that come from? Right? Again, so how do you deal with this pasuk? So again, the Radak is the easiest way of dealing with this pasuk. You're right, this does not correspond to anything we know. This is a higher standard of Kedusha for the Kohanim of the third Beis HaMikdash. And yet, this is a new halacha that somehow, if she was married to a Kohen the first time around, that enables her to go to a Kohen the second time around. For her to go from a Yisrael, however, to a Kohen in her second marriage, for whatever reason, that's deemed as being inappropriate. Okay, good. So that's what Radak says. You're right, doesn't correspond to the halacha the way we know it. It's going to be a different halacha and higher standards. Rashi is obviously harder to work with over here. So the Gemara already quotes this pasuk. The Gemara cites this as one of the problematic pasukim, right? Where this pasuk really seems to contradict what Chumash tells us about the laws of the Kohanim. So Chazal reinterpret this pasuk as saying as follows: V'ho almana asher tihye almana, an almana who becomes widowed, mikohen yikachu, some of the kohanim are allowed to marry. Meaning, not every kohen can marry an almana. A kohen gadol, after all, can't marry a widow, but mikohen. The word, the prefix mem, can sometimes be implies, a limit, some of. Sometimes the mem can be used in that context. So, mi kohen, some of the kohanim, i.e., all of the kohanim besides the kohen gadol, right, are allowed to marry. Now, clearly, that's kind of a difficult way of reading the pasuk, right? It's not the simple way of reading the pasuk, right? But that's what you have to do in order to make the pasuk correspond to the halacha the way we know it. If you're going to take that approach, that all of the halachas that are stated by Yechezkel here are not hilchos la mashiach, they're not new halachas for the coming of Mashiach. They're halachas that even though they sound different, can be interpreted and read back to correspond with the halacha the way we know it. The truth is, it's interesting. If you're familiar with Trup at all. So the trup is set up over here, the Tamei HaMikra, to support Rashi's interpretation. If you look at the trup, so again, without going into too much, I don't know if people really have experience with the trup, but the way the pasuk is punctuated, the trup, in addition to giving us a way to musical notes to read the pasuk, trup also serves to punctuate the pasuk. So here, the way the pasuk is punctuated according to the trup is V'ho almana asher tihye almana kama mikohen yikachu. Right, the kama, the way the trup does it, is placed after the second word almana. Now, the conventional way of reading this pasuk, a la the Radak, would put the kama after the word mikohen. V'ho almana asher tihye almana mikohen kama yikachu. The trup doesn't have it that way. The trup has it V'ho almana. I mean, the way you lay it is V'halmana asher tiyeh almana mikohen yikachu, right? And those last two words are put together, right? That's Rashi's interpretation. V'halmana asher tiyeh almana, the widow who is widowed, that's how she became a widow, right? The widow who is widowed, mikohen yikachu, some of the kohanim can take, some of the kohanim can marry. It's a hard interpretation, right? But there's no other choice.
So she is not an almana of a kohen.
Right.
She's an almana,
and some kohanim can marry her. All the kohanim besides the kohen gadol. Right.
Who's going to judge? Which kohen,
No. So every Kohen. No, every Kohen. Only the Kohen Gadol can't marry. But me Kohen, all the rest of the Kohanim can marry her. Is that hard? Yeah, it's a hard way. Now, so the first part of the pasuk.
Ruth that they can't take, but, and they can just finish it with Alman and Kohen and whatever. You know, you could do it that way.
Now, so the first, again, Rashi will tell you the first part of the pasuk is about Kohen Gadol, right? First part of the pasuk tells you the Amana Gush Aluchu Lehem Lanashim Ki Besulas Mizera Beis Yisrael. Right? Only the Kohanim Gadolim should only take an Amana. It should not take an Amana or a Grusha. But Mi Kohen, the rest of the Kohanim, they can take Amana Shetiya Amana. Right? It's hard, but I mean that's, you know, you have to do something in order to fit it back into the halacha the way we know it.
So the shaila is,
why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu give him such a, you know, express it in such a difficult fashion? In other words, just come out and say it. Okay, Kohen Gadol can't marry an Almana Grusha. Kohen Hediot can marry an Almana, but not a Grusha. Why not just come out and say it? That sounds like the Nevi'im were given an idea, right? And they were given the Ruach HaKodesh. You know, it was transmitted in a certain fashion. Was a dictate, right? Right. So maybe you could say according to that. So maybe it wasn't dictated word for word. So if it wasn't dictated word for word, so why would Yechezkel choose to express it such a difficult way to understand it?
I think we have to wait for Mishu to come to find the rest.
Yeah, that.
So it wasn't meant for us to understand it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Understand it at this time.
I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why it's expressed in that way. Yes, Ami Yoru Ben Kodesh L'chol, or Ben Tomei Lator Yodium. Okay, this passage is easier, right? They will teach, the Kohanim should teach my people the difference between sacred and profane, and the difference between what's Tomei and Tahar. Again, as we stated before, and we stated in previous context, one of the major jobs of the Kohen is not simply to be a ritual functionary, but to be a Melamed Torah. I'm supposed to teach Torah to the Jewish people. And when there's a dispute, the Kohanim will judge it. They will enable my Torah to be guarded and to be observed at all of my appointed times. They should sanctify my Shabbosos. Again, sounds like what it means is that they should be the ones to teach the Jewish people to sanctify Shabbos, to make Yom Tovim special, and in doing so, they'll fulfill their role as teachers, you know, not just as functionaries. V'almeis adam lo yavo l'tama, they should not come into contact with a dead body. Okay, so that fits in with what we know. Kim la'av la'aim la'vein la'vas la'achol la'achos la'hoisa la'ish li'tamo. The only ones they're allowed to come into contact with is a father and mother, a son and daughter, a brother and an unmarried sister. Interestingly, the wife is left out. Even though we know halacha l'maisa that there are shiva krovim, there are seven different relatives who the Kohen is allowed to come into contact with, you know, even after they're passing away. It's actually interesting, you know, it's not the biggest kasha as to why Yechezkel leaves out, you know, the Kohen's wife, because if you look in Chumash also leaves out the Kohen's wife. The pasuk says, the pasuk only enumerates, if you look in Chumash, the beginning of this week's parasha, the pasuk only enumerates six of the six blood relatives that are enumerated here. The pasuk says, Kiyim l'sh'eiro hakarov elov, that the Kohen is allowed to be metame to his flesh which is close to him, which on the simple level is just as follows, you know, his father, his mother, is just a general statement, but Chazal understand, l'sh'eiro hakarov elov is an oblique reference to his wife. But even in Chumash, it's not spelled out. I don't know the reason. But even in Chumash, it's not spelled out that the Kohen can be metami to his wife. Although certainly we accept that halacha l'maisa. So you know, we're not bothered by Yechezkel's omission of the wife, because truth to tell, the pasuk in Chumash on a simple level also omits the ability of the kohen to be matame to his wife.
Even today,
marriage is
not.
Apparently she's left the family in a sense. And even though she's a blood relative, by virtue of getting married, she's gone into a different family. Yeah, that's also fine. Right. So Chafav is another difficult pasuk. V'acharei taharaso, shivas yomim yisperu lo. After the Kohen was not allowed to be metame lemeisim, he wasn't allowed to come into contact with the dead body. But in the seven cases of the seven relatives, he can. He's permitted to do so. After he purifies himself, he should count 7 days before he becomes tahor, before he becomes totally pure. Now, what does that mean exactly? So what it sounds like is that the Kohen purifies himself. Right? We know, how does a person purify themselves from coming to contact with a dead body? So we know that the Torah tells us that's where the Parah Aduma comes in, right? The ashes of the Parah Aduma mixed with water are sprinkled on the person over a period of 7 days. And at the end of those 7 days, the person is able to be metaher. The person can purify himself from tumas meis, from having come into contact with a dead body. So it sounds like what our pasuk is saying is, after the 7 days of purification through the mechatos, the water which is mixed together with the ashes of the parah aduma, acharei taharaso, after that process, shivas yom yisperu lo, tack on another 7 days. Right? So 14, it sounds like the pasuk is saying, from the moment the kohen becomes tamei meis, till he purifies, is the 14-day process. Again, that does not correspond with the halacha the way we know it. The way normative halacha operates is that basically from the time the person becomes tamei till they purify themselves from coming into contact with a dead body is a 7-day process, right? You know, a 7-day process which involves on the 3rd day and the 7th day the hazaras mechatos, sprinkling the water with the ashes of the parah aduma on the person. But after that, from beginning to end, it's a 7-day process, and then the person becomes tahor, right? Again, what do you do with this pasuk that implies that there's a 14-day wait? So either radak, well, you know, Mashiach times, it's going to be extra chumras which we impose upon the person, okay, extra week, right? Or Rashi interprets over here, v'acharei taharoso, after the beginning of his, after he begins his purification process, shivas yomim yisperu lo, so then he should count 7 days. In other words, from beginning to end, it will be 7 days. Okay, you know, again, not what you would have said off the top of your head, but you know that would then make it fit in with the halacha. Uviyom bo'oel hakodesh elochotzer apnimis l'shoris b'kodesh yarpiv chataso ne'um Hashem Elokim. On the day in which he comes into the inner courtyard to serve, he should bring a carbon chatos. He should bring a sin offering. On the simple level, again, I'm just reading the Pasuk of Pshat, this Pasuk is the continuation of the last Pasuk. The Kohen became Tameh. He went through a purification process, 7 or 14 days, and then now when he's ready to start serving the Beis HaMikdash again, he has to bring a Korban Chatos to get himself back into the groove. Again, that does not correspond to what we know as being Halacha. You know, after a Kohen is Metaher himself from Tumah, there's no carbon that he has to bring. He just, you know, he shows up the next day at work, you know. Oh, you know, Chaim, you know, we missed you this past week, you know, it's good to have you back. And he, you know, goes into the service again. He doesn't have to bring the carbon chata. So Rashi interprets that what we're talking about over here is the minchas chinuch, the special carbon which a Kohen brings on his first day of inauguration into the service. There is a halacha that, you know, the first day when a Kohen starts off, you know, the beginning of his Kohanic career, he's supposed to bring a special carbon. So that's Rashi says this pasuk has nothing to do with the previous pasuk. This is Uviyom Ba'oel HaKodesh L'Chatzer HaPnimis L'Shareis Ba'Kodesh. When the Kohen for the first time comes into the Beit HaMikdash to serve, Yakriv Chatzoso, let him bring his carbon. Right? Again, the Radak would say, no, it talks about the Kohen being Matar himself from Tumah, and in Messianic times there's going to be a carbon which will be part of that process as well. V'Hoysa Lohem L'Nachala Aninach Lotzam Yahuza Lositni Lohem Bi Yisrael Aninach Huzotzam. They shouldn't have a portion in the land of Israel. Only God is their portion. Hamincha V'Achatas V'Oshem Hem Yochlum The Kohanim are entitled to eat certain korbanos. If a person dedicates something to the Beis HaMikdash, it can become the property of the Kohanim. That's Cheirim. Bikurim and Truma should be brought to the Kohen. Okay, that does correspond to what we know. You should give challah, the first portion of your dough, to the Kohen as well. Again, that is consistent with Torah law the way we know it. Finally, Kohanim are prohibited from eating nevela, an animal which dies not through shchita. We'll talk about that in a minute. And treifa, which is an animal which has some kind of internal injury, which makes it treif, hence the word treif, right? So Kohanim are not allowed to eat that. So as, Pasuk couldn't leave us alone. Even the last pasuk that we're hit with, a very difficult pasuk over here. Thought it was smooth sailing for a couple of psukim, but here we get hit with a difficult pasuk. Yeah, okay, good. So Kohanim are not allowed to eat treif. Nobody's allowed to eat treif, right? After so many years of Jewish education, all of a sudden you open up a pasuk in Yechezkel and says, okay, only if you're a kohen you can't eat treif, but really everybody else. So what's going on over here? What's this pasuk? So the Mefarshim explained that under certain circumstances a kohen can eat treif. So the pasuk has to tell us specifically that in most cases he can't. When a bird offering was brought in the Beit HaMikdash, it was not shechted in the way in which we normally shecht fowls. There was a process known as malika. Right? Malika meant that the Kohen would basically take a very long thumbnail. Kohanim had to grow their thumbnails long. And using his thumbnail, he would essentially cut the neck of the bird. And that was how the bird was quote unquote slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash. It was not shechita, it was malika. Then the Kohen would be able to eat the sacrificial portion of that bird. It was a special dispensation that had to do with karbonos, right? That certain fowl was killed through malika, not through shechita. So since there's a special dispensation that occasionally the Kohen would eat, or the Kohanim would eat, birds that were slaughtered through malika, not through shechita, we have to reiterate that this is not somehow some kind of special privilege that's given to Kohanim. You might think that sometimes there's special rules, special dispensations for the Kohanim. So we have to tell you no, just because he has malika and a bird that was killed through malika in the Beis HaMikdash doesn't mean that when he leaves the Beis HaMikdash, he can't go to McDonald's and just order a chicken salad sandwich, that was killed through some other way other than shechita. The heter to not use shechita is something that's unique to the Beis HaMikdash and doesn't apply outside. Okay, so it's a difficult haftarah in terms of fitting the psukim back into the original halachic context. Kodesh Baruch Hu should very, very soon bring us the third Beis HaMikdash so we can figure out what these psukim are going to mean in their context.
There's so many discrepancies, no wonder.
Yeah.
They were hesitating if they wanted to include it that you needed.
Yeah, no, you can definitely understand. Oh, yes.
I think we talked about it.
No, no, sorry.